welcome to a special bonus episode of the Miranda Law Firm podcast, Investing Beyond Borders. This is our second bonus podcast expressly dedicated to the ongoing conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Today, we will be sharing part two of the conversation we had with Yuri Nechayev, a corporate and M&A lawyer and partner of Avalum, a leading Ukrainian full-service law firm based in Kiev. Our colleague Filippo Monteiro will be talking to our guest about the impressive resilience of Ukrainian people, the impact of Western sanctions imposed on Russia, the exodus of Western companies from the Russian market, the role of lawyers and law firms in preventing kleptocracy, and what future may bring for Ukraine. So stay with us if you want to find out more. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Investing Beyond Borders. Filippo, over to you.
Ethics, reputation, compliance with ESG standards, and risk management issues are some of the main reasons causing Western companies to cut ties with and flee from Russia. Being a corporate and M&A lawyer, were you expecting such a massive reaction from the Western corporate world?
I would have been surprised had such measures been adopted before the war. However, after the war started, such massive reaction appeared to me as a natural one. While even the sole fact of this war is a sufficient reason for Western companies fleeing from Russia, the slightest doubt should disappear as we see more and more evidence of war crimes and crimes against humanity that the Russian army has committed and continues to commit in Ukraine. Bucha and Mariupol are just two of many such examples. And it's not only the question of ethics, reputation and ESG standards. Obviously, it's a question of money too. Just imagine how much funds were wasted for Nord Stream 2. Large amounts have and will be lost as sunk cost by the Western businesses that had decided to make money in Russia, ignoring numerous reports of potential Russian aggression against Ukraine, and generally how Russia gradually becomes a totalitarian state. So, as a corporate and M&A lawyer, I was rather surprised by the statement of a French company, Leroy Merlin, operating in Russia, that it made at the beginning of March, after the war started. It intended not only to continue its business operation in Russia, but also expected to increase its market share. So I would expect that more and more businesses will understand that unethical business is unprofitable business.
To what extent do you think the reaction was driven by the expectations of stakeholders, such as customers in Western countries?
Western economies are mostly driven by the market. Thus, companies depend on the position of customers, their views on what is right and what is wrong. I believe that such withdrawal of businesses from Russia was, to a large extent, prompted by views of customers in developed countries, who were shocked by the fact of the full-fledged invasion of Russia into Ukraine. And I'm sure they were particularly shocked by Russia's targeting civilians, besieging and destructing the whole cities, towns and villages, other brutal violations of international humanitarian law. Principled position of companies and their compliance record are important elements, but the pressure of society or anticipated negative reaction to certain conduct definitely plays a crucial role.
ESG and sustainability investment funds have typically excluded defense stocks. This war triggered a significant shift in this positioning, and now several funds allow investments in the defense sector. What are your views on this?
I strongly believe in the power of nonviolent resistance. So to say, I am a follower of Tolstoy, Gandhi and Martin Luther King. Therefore, I'm not a big advocate of investments into the defense sector. However, the plight of Ukrainian people, the war happening in Europe in the 21st century, did prove that the global security architecture and international legal mechanisms cannot function adequately. Despite all the efforts to create stable global order and security, we all became hostages in the hands of one dictator who has access to resources and nuclear weapons. Since 2014, Ukraine has been using all available legal mechanisms to counter Russian aggression, but all attempts did not bring tangible results. We even received an opposite result. Russia became confident that it might get away not only with the occupation of Crimea and part of Donbas region, but also with the occupation of the entire Ukraine. Therefore, despite my personal preferences, I must admit that until an effective global security model is created, the only remaining avenue to respond to such threats is through adequate, responsible, and timely investment into the defense sector. As I said before, timely support to Ukraine with the armament, airplanes, rocket systems, tanks, and air defense systems could have saved lots of lives, could have prevented attacks on Ukraine on the well-being of millions of Ukrainians. Moreover, this could have prevented the extremely worrying threats that were posed, for example, by the takeover of the two nuclear plants in Ukraine, in Chernobyl, which has recently been liberated by the Ukrainian army, and in Zaporizhia, which still remains under the control of the Russian forces.
Considering the situation you and your fellow citizens are currently facing, in your opinion, can obligations on corporate responsibility and ESG indeed drive positive changes in the world?
Yes, I do believe these obligations are crucial factors not only for responding to, but more importantly for the prevention of such situations like the war of Russia against Ukraine. It is critically important to screen the domains of your investments, your potential clients, through the ESG criteria. This is especially so these days, when the situation is crystal clear and the war democracies introduced unprecedented sanctions towards the Russian regime. Their main aim is to cut the income-generating possibilities and supplies used to feed the cruel war machine. It was a great relief to see that since the active war began, over 600 companies withdrew from Russia. Nevertheless, some businesses stay in the aggressor state. It was quite disappointing to see that on the 5th of March, the French president gathered the French business entities and conveyed a message along the lines that the French business should not rush to leave the Russian market. To keep track of the companies that still do business in Russia and thus sponsor the Russia's war against Ukraine, Ukrainian students from Massachusetts University and Stanford University jointly developed a website. You may follow don'tfundwar.com to see the list of such companies and possible steps you might take. Such surprising approach taken by some Western companies in seemingly black and white situation proved that obligations on corporate responsibility and ESG are not yet taken seriously by everyone, and this needs to change.
Hopefully, this war will end soon and Ukraine will then face a different challenge, cleanup and reconstruction. In your view, how can Ukraine and the international community hold Russia accountable for cleanup and reconstruction costs?
We should not expect voluntary compensation by Russia, at least not with the current political regime in the Kremlin. Many of you may have heard about the interim measures to cease hostilities in Ukraine ordered by the International Court of Justice in March. Russia simply ignored it. Thus, a more realistic way to hold Russia accountable is by seizing the Russian assets frozen by the Western countries and by Ukraine. These include not only state assets, but also assets of Russian oligarchs who earned their wealth by corrupt ways. While substantial, these funds may still not be sufficient given the scale of destruction of civil infrastructure by the Russian armed forces. Just imagine, Mariupol, a city that before the war was home to 500,000 of residents, is now completely destroyed. And it's just one of many. And the war is not over yet. Thus, it is important that as many states as possible contribute to the so-called New Marshall Plan, Ukraine Solidarity Trust Fund that was announced and which aim is to accumulate funds for rebuilding the country after the war.
What more can we do to be of help?
The current war in Ukraine concerns everybody, everybody and everywhere. Being limited to the battlefield in Ukraine, this war will have, and actually already has, far-reaching implications globally. I think most of the people in civilized countries understand this, and that by helping Ukraine, they are actually helping themselves. This is what we have on, let's say, a positive side. So what do we have on a negative side? It is the 48th day of the war, large-scale war with severe humanitarian consequences, and there is no immediate solution at sight to end this war. It is quite natural that the crisis is emotionally and psychologically draining. The enthusiasm of the first days is followed by more and more fatigue and exhaustion. Your consciousness will try to refocus you on something else. So how do you reconcile positive and negative side? You don't have to constantly follow events in Ukraine, but try to keep it within your sight. This is a long distance run, and this run will not even end with the end of the war. It will only end when Ukraine rebuilds itself after the war. Now in terms of the practical things. A donation made at the beginning of the Russian invasion in Ukraine or putting the Ukrainian flag in social media are important, but may not be enough. The economy of Ukraine got paralyzed, people lost their livelihoods. Moreover, as the Ukrainian president once said, weapons supplied to us within 1 week are used by the Ukrainian army within just 2 days. Remember that the aggressor state was preparing for this war for years, accumulating weaponry, warplanes, shells and rockets, and Ukraine started receiving some of so desperately needed weapons only within the last months. In light of this, in terms of collective efforts, you may help mostly by using one of the best tools given by the democracy, putting pressure on our government. First, encourage your governments to ensure that the already introduced sanctions have no loopholes. For example, Russian banks were generally cut off from SWIFT, but some were still left plugged into the system, which undermines the intended result. More specifically, the Russian bank through which the payments for energy supplies are done, Gazprombank, continues to be a part of SWIFT. Through this bank, Russia purchases military drones that it uses in Ukraine. By the way, seeing that many sanctions may be avoided, Ukraine created a special working group to constantly track the effect of sanctions and find gaps in their application. Second, increase the pressure on new governments to get more sanctions on the Kremlin regime, brutally killing civilians in Ukraine. These may prevent some other tragedies similar to the horrifying situation in Mariupol or massacre in Bucha. By the way, Bucha is just 20 kilometers from the place where I am now. The more important would be to put embargo on oil supplies from Russia. Third, put more pressure on business to withdraw from Russia. They have better things to do than being sponsors of killings of civilians in Ukraine. And fourth, encourage your governments to accelerate the provision of air defense systems, heavy armament, and other critical weaponry.
If all the people in the world could hear you right now, what is the message you would like to spread?
Current events in Ukraine are tectonic, and we are witnessing the further vector of the development of the global order. No one may deny one thing. Everything is interconnected in this world, and the consequences of the Ukrainian tragedy impacts everyone, even if not felt immediately. Everyone and everywhere may do something positive that Ukrainians will feel. Show solidarity with Ukrainian people in all the forms possible, from a post in social media to joining the March for Peace in your city. Host and help Ukrainian refugees. Send humanitarian assistance or donations to help Ukraine. And put pressure on your governments, as I have described in detail while answering the preceding question. Now, the war in Ukraine is a real test for the civilized community. Russia is not the only threat to the world. Confident and effective response to its actions is a message to the entire world and, first and foremost, to potential violators of international peace and security. Our choices and actions today are shaping not only our collective tomorrow, but also tomorrow of each of us and each of our family members.
Thanks, Filippo. And thank you, Yuri, for once again sharing your thoughts with us in this episode of Investing Beyond Borders. We hope you enjoy this content and found something to reflect about wherever you are. Throughout the year, we will be bringing you more news and content related to the work carried out by our ESG Impact Plus team. Stay tuned to this podcast, to our website and LinkedIn page to hear more from us on these important issues. This podcast was brought to you by Miranda Law Firm. You can find out more about our worldwide activities and assistance to investors at www.mirandalawfirm.com. This episode was presented by Filippo Monteiro from our Lisbon office and Luiz Miranda from the Houston office. Technical support is provided by Hugo Ribeiro from our communications department. All content is subject to copyright and protected by law.